Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today's Monday, July 3rd, 2023, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 91, the first paragraph. Usually the family should not try to tell your story, ending in the way of a solution. Reading and commenting on that one paragraph only today. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Justine F., 12 Traditions, Joanne L. Reader of the text will be Cheryl S. and Abby D. The reference number for Sunday, July 2nd is 20,405. That's 20405. And for this morning, Monday, July 3rd, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 20,406, 20406. Our newcomer greeter this morning is Alex K., and Reggie O. will do the announcements. Thank you to everyone for your vital service. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Justine to read the 12 steps of OA.
Thank you. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I will now ask Joanne L. to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning, Dawn. Good morning, everybody. And my name is Joanne L. from Rhode Island, and I am recovered in Rhode Island. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Lease problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you very much, and have a nice holiday.
Thank you so much, Joanne L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 91, the first paragraph. Usually, the family should not try to tell your story, ending in a way of a solution. Reading and commenting on that one paragraph only today. I will now ask Cheryl S. to begin reading for us.
Good morning. This is Cheryl S., gratefully recovered in Nevada. Usually, the family should not try to tell your story. When possible, avoid meeting a man through his family. Approach through a doctor or an institution is a better bet. If your man needs hospitalization, he should have it, but not forcibly unless he is violent. Let the doctor, if he will, tell him he has something in the way of a solution. So for me, this paragraph kind of twofold. It talks about our families and it talks about hospitalization. And what comes to me is that, you know, our families are on the front lines with us in this disease. When we're practicing and even when we're recovered. And there was a lot of shame and guilt about being overweight. And there was also a lot of resentment towards my husband when I was in my disease around his attempts to, help me see that I needed to lose weight. There were just so many feelings mixed up around the family relationship, and it just all felt too close to the bone. And it says in the doctor's opinion, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. And that's what it felt like, with my family when they were trying to help me see that I was very sick with compulsive overeating. And it talks, too, about, the doctor approaching the family, approaching the compulsive overeater. And I just don't see that is really applicable. It wasn't to me, let me say that. I'd had doctors say things to me, but I didn't really take it seriously. And for me, I needed to really be tired of the emotional and spiritual deprivation before I was ready to get help. It really wasn't the weight, although I was very miserable about the weight. Don't get me wrong. But I didn't, it was like I didn't feel like I was going to go out and die tomorrow. And the other part was about hospitalization. So I was instructed through my sponsor to go into a form of hospitalization, and it was not like a rehab or a treatment center, but it was just during that period where I was getting abstinent and working the steps, and I needed to be really aware of my frailty and know that my abstinence was balancing really on a knife's edge, because in the beginning I was maintaining my abstinence with willpower, self-will. But I also knew that that self-will, that willpower could fail at any time. And the reason was I just wasn't furthest, you know, I wasn't along, far enough along in the steps to be safe and protected, which is promised in the big book. But it's not promised until after step 10. But there is a grace. There's grace along the way. I found that through working the steps. But I also knew that I was vulnerable. So I didn't go out and eat. I didn't.
Time.
And that's not true. Thank you. I did go out and eat sometime, but I was just really, really aware. And that's all I have to share. And I'm looking forward to what other people have to say. Thanks for letting me give service.
Thank you so much, Cheryl S. I will now take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us this morning?
Chanel T.
Chanel T.
Danielle W.
Danielle W. Press star one if you'd like to share.
Linda W.
Linda W.
Hi, Deb F.
Deb F.
Ivy S.
Ivy S. Okay, let's go with that lineup. That's fantastic. Chanel T., Danielle W., Linda W., Deb F., and Ivy S. Chanel T., please share with us. And if you're not Chanel, please star one to make sure you're muted. Thank you.
Hi, this is Chanel in Washington State. So glad to be here with you this morning. I love this book. Love this book. And every time I think, oh, you know, this paragraph, maybe this doesn't apply. It does. It still applies. When I'm reading this paragraph, I'm thinking of a baby and how when you have a baby and she or he gets to that point where they're trying to stand up to walk. If we keep on holding their hands and carrying them around, and we can't walk for them. They have to learn to take those steps on their own. It's the only way they're ever going to walk. So we can't go through the family as the sponsor or the person wanting to get abstinent and recover, because the steps have to be done by the person wanting and willing to do it. Program for people who do it, not just who want it or need it, right? So this is just a really good reminder to me, and I'd really like to hear everyone else share. So that's all I have today. I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chanel T. Danielle W., please share with us, followed by Linda W. And let us know where you're calling from, if you would.
Okay, thank you. This is Danielle W. from Southern California. Recovered, not cured. And my voice is going up a little bit. But, you know, where it talks about approach through a doctor or an institution is a better bet, but that's assuming a doctor even knows about OA. And I had an interesting situation where for years I would go to my general practitioner and she would try to put me on high blood pressure medicine and cholesterol medicine. And this went on for years and years, and I would say, you know what, I'll do better. And I don't want to go in medicine. I'll do better. And nothing really changed. And then I finally found my way into OA, and I started working the steps, and I started to get better. And when I went in for my physical, this is a number of years ago, she was stunned that, you know, my blood pressure had come down, my cholesterol had improved. And, you know, she asked, like, what finally happened? And I started to tell her about my experience with OA. And she didn't know anything about it. And, you know, it was such an opportunity for me to share something, to be of service in a way, so that she had something else in her toolkit that she also could share with somebody struggling. I forget that sometimes the people, our physicians, the doctors that we see, may not be aware of this program and what it has to offer. And so, as you know, just like with a potential sponsee, if somebody expresses an interest, I'm happy to share my experience, strength, and hope, in hopes that it might be of service to somebody else. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Danielle W. from California. Linda W., please share with us, followed by Deb F.
Hi, this is Linda W. from Las Vegas, Nevada, and thank you, everybody, for all your shares, always. I always enjoy it and really get a lot from it. This is reminding me of this just happened. I went to my endocrinologist, and, you know, I didn't think I had a problem. I mean, I worked the steps, and I still didn't think I had the problem of overeating, you know, and then I would have break. And finally, I finally came to my senses and became abstinent. But I was with the endocrinologist, and he was talking about my weight. Not only the endocrinologist, a lung doctor was telling me about my weight, and my regular physician was telling me about my weight. And I, you know, nobody ever said anything, and all of a sudden, everybody's saying something to me. So I really took it to heart. So I was discussing with my endocrinologist, you know, what I do. I pray when I feel like I want to eat. But my hands were crossed. And he said, you know, Linda, every time you have that feeling, cross your hands, and then, or make the cross with your hands, on both hands, over, cross over, and remind yourself. So, you know, there are ways through doctors. You know, I blew everybody off, including my doctors, but I didn't this time. So therefore, I just wanted to share the experience that doctors can help. And if you trust your doctor, then, you know, it might mean something more than just saying something. Anyhow, thank you very much for letting me share. Bye.
Thank you so much, Linda W. from Nevada. And if you just happen to be joining us, we are on page 91. We're talking about the first paragraph there. Starts with, usually the family should not try to tell your story, ending with, in the way of a solution. So we're talking about that one paragraph today. Deb F., please share with us, followed by IVS, and then I'll be taking some more names.
This is Deb F. from Central Texas, and I'm really happy to be here today. And what came up for me in this reading was just my journey in recovery, for food recovery. And I can remember being a little girl, because that's when I started to use the food. I can remember, you know, my grandmother, you know, she was a hairdresser, and she'd be doing my hair, and she goes, oh, you'd be such a beautiful girl if you just didn't eat so much, which, you know, always really endeared me to her, you know. and then, you know, my mother would say various things through the years, including, I don't know if you guys remember Twiggy. Well, they also, during the era of Twiggy, they had tent dresses, and she would say, I'm going to take you out to the tent shop, you know, to get you some clothes. And I'm just, my figure is more curvaceous even when I'm at my total low weight, you know, abstinent weight. And so it was just, you know, all kinds of things were done to try to get me, to motivate me, which none of it did. And then finally, when I did get into program, the group that I went to was really concerned about me when my mom passed away, and they could just see that I was just going to go nuts. And so they said, oh, there's this great recovery, you know, hospital program. So I trusted them. So I went in, and I can remember it was like being in a straitjacket. It was really, really hard. And I remember leaving early. And then when I got home, a sheriff came after me just wanting to make sure I was okay. I just said, I'm just glad to be out of there. They were telling me exactly what to eat, and I didn't want to do it. So, you know, and then I would go to program, and they would say, you're just not surrendered. You're not surrendered. You're not surrendered. And it was just like, it just felt like, well, I'm trying to be in the club that helps me, and I'm not getting help. But I was my worst enemy. And finally, when I did, you know, 3.5 years ago, before that too, I was able to submit to weighing and measuring my food, but never got into the steps the way I did in the last three and a half years. And that has made all the difference in the world to be able to see myself face to face. So that's pretty much what came up for me. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Deb F. from Texas. Ivy S., please share with us, and then I'll be taking some more names.
Thank you. IVS, compulsive overeater and bulimic. I'm grateful to be here. I don't share as often as I probably should and need to, but yeah, it's always a privilege to share at this very large meeting. What stood out to me in this paragraph is that first line, actually, where it says, usually the family should not try to tell your story. When I came into the program this most recent time, I had a huge resentment against my mom in particular in my family, and I think I would have bristled for her to tell my story. But, you know, for me, I think it was important that I share my story, for me to hear myself share about what I do when I eat my alcoholic foods and the whole insanity of what, you know, happens when I start going down that road, you know. And there's just, for me, it has been powerful to hear myself say, you know, that whole experience. And in another part in the book, it talks about that we as addicts are uniquely qualified. And I think that's part of it, that, you know, like I hear a fellow in Overeaters Anonymous share their story, and like something clicks in my brain, you know, like I identify in, and the same thing when I share my story to fellows. We bond in that way, in that beautiful way. Yeah, so I tell my story to those who have been where I have been, you know, with the insanity of the, you know, not being able to stop or stay stopped, and, you know, the whole insanity of thinking tomorrow, you know, tomorrow will be different. And so my family, I don't think, really gets, they're not compulsive eaters or bulimic. And so I don't think they really get it. And I'm totally okay with that. You know, that's one of the gifts of this program. I can just be at peace with that. The important thing is that I understand who I am, you know, bodily and mentally different from fellows. And I have a place to go. I have fellows who understand. And so that's really a beautiful thing and a gift. So that's all I wanted to share. I'm grateful to be here, and I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, IVS. I'm now going to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us, and especially those who haven't shared all that often? We would love to hear from you today. So go ahead, please press star 1 and let me know if you'd like to share.
Joanne in Colorado. Vermont.
Nancy L.
Was that a Joanne?
Yeah, Joanne B. Vermont.
Joanne
P. Colorado.
B. And then I have Kaya P. And who else did I miss there?
Nina S., California.
Nina S., California. Anyone
Joan
else
Marie,
I missed?
Joan Marie M.
Joan Marie. Okay, I have Joanne B., Kaya P., Nina S., and Joan Marie. Let's go ahead with that lineup. Joanne B., please share with us.
Good morning. Joanne B. from Vermont, recovered compulsive overeater. This is a great paragraph. And what it brings to mind for me is my experience with my weight and doctors. And part of my disease, I think, when I was in the food was, denial and kind of like turning a blind eye, and to the point where I would go to the doctor and they would ask me to get on the scale. And for years, I would refuse to get on the scale for them. I would just say, no, I'm not doing it, because I was just too afraid to look at the number. And I was afraid to face it. And they'd say, okay, no problem. And then I'd give them a number that I thought I was at. And it was just like I was just completely lying to myself. The other thing, toward the end, before I came to OA and I got abstinent, I would like avoid any kind of mirrors, like in my home or if I was out anywhere. I hated going shopping, but I would just avoid mirrors, and even like walking down the street, like where you'd see like a glass pane window, like things like that. I would like literally just didn't want to see what I look like. And if I saw a picture of myself, it would be like, that can't be me, or is that me? So I think when I finally got desperate enough to look for help, I'm really grateful that I found OA, because it's totally changed my life. I'm able to stay abstinent. I'm working every day on my spiritual program, going to meetings, being of service, helping others. And I feel good. But I don't feel like the food is not ruling me anymore. I feel comfortable with what I'm eating. And I don't feel like it's a diet, like that there's going to be an end point and then I'm done. It's just like this is like my everyday now. I can get on the scale now and look at the number, but I don't obsess about it either. So I think that's all like really good, healthy changes. And thanks for letting me share it today. Have a great holiday, everybody.
Thank you so much, Joanne B. from Vermont. Kaya P., please share with us, followed by Nina S.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kaya P. My name is spelled C-H-A-Y-A-P, and I live in Colorado. I'm very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, bulimic, and restrictor. First, I just want to welcome anyone who's new to OA or who's new to this meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you, or anyone who's been, you know, coming and still struggling, because there's miracles ready, waiting. We don't know when they're going to happen, but they do. And I'm reflecting as we read that, and I'm listening to other people share, and, you know, it's so interesting. This is where, like, I really so believe that there's timing, God's timing, you know, everything's in God's time. And by the way, if anyone's new and having trouble with the God thing, I walked out of my first meeting when they spoke about God, but the hoop is very wide and you can have your own conception, and I'm grateful that that has grown for me tremendously. But it's timing, you know. When I was 18, right shortly before I came into OA, I was seeing a therapist, and that therapist was very not into OA. She she was into more of the more intuitive mindset. And this was like 38 years ago, more than that, I think. And, you know, so that wasn't, but she liked Al-Anon and so sent me to Al-Anon, and Al-Anon eventually introduced me to OA. So there's timing, you know, and I know that, like, professionally, I'm a therapist, and a lot of people come to me who are in recovery, which is great because that's something that can be moved forward. But a lot of people come with addictions, and I introduce them to the 12 steps. And you know what? There's nothing I can do to make them do that. I can introduce them, and it's their timing, with God's timing. And it's just given me, and that's why I say a miracle is always available. It's waiting. We don't know when it's going to happen. And that's why my job is to try to do everything I'm told. And when it comes to carrying the message, try to carry the message, but not like, you know, there's a difference. You know, when you feed the birds, I'll end with this. When you feed the birds, there's two ways. One is, here, birdie, birdie. And the other one is, here's the bread, you know, and when you do, here's the bread, the birds fly away. When you do, here, birdie, birdie, and just be an example, essentially, then I'm working with God, and then whatever happens for those people that I'm sharing the message with and for myself, too. So that's all. Thanks so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Chaya P. from Colorado. Nina S., please share with us, followed by Joan Marie, and then I'll take a few more names.
Thank you. My name is Nina S. from Northern California. I'm so grateful to hear this meeting today. I'm coming off of a long vacation and finally got some sleep after jet lag, so you're all just music to my ears. What came up for me, though, was just that, the phrase attraction, not promotion. And it doesn't matter how bad your family wants it for you or how bad you want it too. You have to use that God-given strength. And that's such a hard concept. It was such a hard concept for me. And it's still sometimes, I still want to control instead of give it over. And I still want to, like, challenge God's abilities in my life, even though I know it works every time. But my disease always wants to take me to that other place. And also it reminded me of the drama that families can bring on and the codependence that was so present for me in my own addictions as well, that grooming and conditioning and all the yucky stuff that goes along with addictions of all different kinds, and families are just riddled with them all the way, you know, everywhere. And it touches everybody. And how there is no way to control that, there's no way to stop it, there's no way to manage it while you're in the midst of it. Instead, you have to set it down and walk away from it. And it's that I always think of, like, walking down a sidewalk and just, you know, stepping around the yuckiness on the sidewalk, whether it's, you know, dog poop or a piece of gum or somebody's spit. It's like, nope, I'm just going to step aside that and not allow that in my life. I got to step aside and let the drama just pass me by. And that has been the only thing that's worked for me with recovery. The only way I can get recovered is if I have that internal reflection and have that time for self to connect and be a part of this group instead of trying always to striving to be a part of this, like, addictive family group. So I am happy to be home, and I'm happy to be a part of a program that talks about all of the aspects of family and disease and addiction and food and God and all the stuff that used to freak me out. Because I started my disease very young as well. It was my first addiction, and I went through all the other ones first and still came back to this one. But when I see people who have what I want, that's the reason I stay, because of that attraction, not promotion. They're not screaming, oh, do it like me, you know, try this challenge or do this diet. They're saying, I have serenity because it comes from within and it comes from that God place. And that's why I keep coming back. Thanks a lot. I talk.
Thank you so much, Nina S. from California. Joan Marie, please share with us, and then I'll take some more names.
Hi, good morning, everyone. What beautiful, beautiful shares. I got so much from that. And I was thinking about how can I relate to this. Well, I can tell my own story. And my story is this. Many years ago, I was in regular OA, And I worked the steps many times and lived them. I worked on my spiritual journey. And I just thought this time before coming back is that, you know, me and God can do it. And I know that happens for people, but I need, it's a WE program. And so this time when I cried out to God and told, you know, surrendered my foods, which I like to call alcoholic foods, immediately, before I was in step one, I was actually taking step one at that point because I had done the steps many times. The obsession and the compulsion was removed even before I began the steps this time. But this time around, I'm using all the tools, especially the outreach calls. I received so much from that. The other night I was just laughing with someone so much. And then the other one that was really different for me this time was the review at nighttime. You know, I've always pretty much, when I was doing the program, weighing and measuring and calling in. But this time the nightly a review, because I ate because of emotions, mainly negative emotions. And by doing the nightly review, those emotions don't build up and I don't have that garbage, whatever it is. So today I'm so grateful to the program, to God, to all of you that share and make this happen. And I'll pass with that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joan Marie from Nevada. I'm now going to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So if you don't share often, I would especially love to take your name.
Nancy J.
Nancy J. Was there another Nancy? I have Nancy J.
Natalie S.
Was there another voice there?
Selena M.
And that's, I think that's all I have time with. Who is that other voice? And I'll take your name just in case we have time.
I was just asking what paragraph we were on.
Oh, very good. We're on page 91, the first paragraph. Usually the family should not try to tell your story.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. So I have Nancy J., Natalie S., and Selena, and we'll start there and see if we have more time. Nancy J., please share with us.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Nancy J., gratefully recovered in California. The first sentence, usually the family should not try to tell your story. Yeah, telling someone's story is never, I don't think, is not going to be effective. You know, we need to hear from someone that's been through it, or I did, certainly. I know when I was in my disease and family members, actually, my mom really was the only one that ever said anything to me when she was alive, you know, and I would just get into, it would reinforce where I was. You know, you don't understand, nobody understands. If you'd have done this different, I wouldn't be in this situation, you know, that whole kind of thing. So I think, you know, maybe if the opportunity comes up, perhaps you could have, you can suggest to someone, you know someone that maybe has been in their situation. I was recently at the doctor, and I'm out of a nasty relapse for 2 years. It's about 7 months now, I think. And I've taken off 50 pounds. God has just removed that from me. It's such a miracle. And my doctor, of course, was very impressed. And he said, "How did you do it?" And I briefly explained that I was working a spiritual program. And he looked at me like I had, you know, three eyes. And he's an older doctor, you know, and he's been around. And Hopefully I wasn't just disconnected. I heard something. Anyway, I talked to him about the program, and I said, you know, so if you ever have a patient that says they can't stop eating and they're out of control, you might want to suggest Overeaters Anonymous. I said, I would recommend looking it up. And I told him briefly, you know, about the founder. And he said, I just had a patient in here this morning that might benefit from this. So I'm a nurse, and I know that this is just not something people, a lot of people know about, you know. So I do, I did share it with my physician, and I urge, you know, I'm going to take a flyer in my next trip and tell them, hey, put this in your drawer, you know. So anyway, great meeting this morning. Thank you, everyone on the line. So grateful for OA and all of you. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Nancy J. from California. Natalie S., please share with us, followed by Selena.
Hi, thank you so much. This is Natalie S. from Arizona. And what I've been thinking about, as folks have shared and we read this, was that when I was in my disease, I invited my family into it because I wanted them to save me, especially my children. And every time I did, then I would react and get angry with them because they couldn't understand. And I was putting them in a really bad situation. I did the same thing with my parents. I did the same thing. And then I sort of resented my siblings because it seemed like, you know, there's this turmoil and nobody's paying attention and nobody's helping me and nobody's listening to me. And in doing that, I couldn't even see it. And my expression of Overeaters Anonymous is the restricting and overexercising and controlling and managing till ad infinitum, so to speak. And so it took losing all of that, as losing the relationships with my children to some extent, you know, they're polite, losing relationships with my brother and sister, and then my mom and dad just sort of hung in there, you know. And God brought me to a place 40 years later where he had to show me that I had to be desperate enough to want those things back, that a friend introduced me to Overeaters Anonymous. And so then I found that just working the steps in December and making amends felt great to me. I'm like, look, guys, I'm really trying to do this and I am changing and can't you see me? Well, then I had to remember I'm the one who's changing and they're not. So I have to also then, in terms of sharing my story with them, give it to them in a way that they can trust me and rebuild those relationships. So it's been an interesting process. And as I think it was Haya shared, you know, that's the timing of all of this. And I don't know when my kids are going to realize that I've changed and that, you know, I am different and I want to be different and show up differently. And I'm not relying on them or coming to them for a solution. I've got a solution somewhere else. And I just want to be in relationship with them. And I just look forward to that gift at some point, hopefully. So that's really all I wanted to share on this paragraph. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Natalie S. from Arizona. Selena, please share with us. And if you could give me your initial and where you're calling from.
Hi, everyone. This is Selena. I'm Selena M. from Alberta, Canada. This paragraph just reminds me of all of the people that have outside of program that have been, you know, all of the experience I've had with people outside of the program over the years. And the first one reminds me of it is family, but I want to share that, you know, I spent a few years trying to get this program. It was not easy at the beginning, like I know a lot of people have experienced. But I was able to take some weight off, but I couldn't stay abstinent. So I was, you know, in the food for 5 days, and then I would have an abstinent day, and then I'd be back in the food. And along with that was my moods. you know, my family took the brunt of that instability. And so there was one point in time where my husband, who is generally extremely gentle and kind, he's a very gentle and kind man, and very accepting of me and the things, you know, and my struggles. But he said to me, you know, Selena, I kept leaving the house to go eat, and then, you know, coming back, and I, you know, trying to be sneaky, and then, you know, but then there was times where I would just binge right in front of everybody, even though I was supposed to be on a program. And he said to me, you know, Selena, if you were an alcoholic, I would never let you sit here in front of the family and eat the way you're eating. He said, it's unacceptable. He put his foot down. He treated me like he would treat an alcoholic spouse. And he set a boundary. And that was, I think, one of the big turning points for me. You know, I have had, you know, communication with nutritionists, with friends that are probably food addicts themselves, but aren't interested in this type of solution, and doctors. And I'll tell you, the nutritionists have struggled with they think it's an extreme program. That I've talked to. My doctor has been very, he's very impressed with, you know, being able to keep my weight off for 10 years, but he doesn't share my program with anybody. And I think that where I have found the greatest support is in my fellowship, of the people that really have truly lived food addiction and compulsive overeating. And so that's where I find my peace, and that's where I find my support. And I just don't have expectations for people outside of program, because they all come from with their different experiences and perspectives. So, I'm so grateful for my fellowship, because my fellowship understands, and they just, you know, they're there. So, with that, I'll pass. Selena M., Medicine Hat, Alberta, Canada. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Selena M., and to everyone who shared today, making this meeting just really, really special. If you happen to be new, please stick around. We're going to be, in a few moments, taking the names of newcomers who have never announced their names and numbers before, so that we might welcome you to the community. And so please stick around to the very end of the meeting. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Abby D. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then.
Hi, thank you so much. My name is Abby D. I'm recovered in Michigan. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.